all it took was 40 characters for Texas Christian University to suspend a student, and they have here a conservative student, who posted a series of social networking posts that insulted Islam. The TCU banned Harry Vincent from most campus activities and ordered him to perform 60 hours of community service and attend diversity training classes. Is it possible to be informed and moral and not be opposed to Islam?
Well, you have to be kind of well, once you throw in the word moral.
No.
No.
No. No, if you can be informed and not be opposed to Islam if you are immoral. You know, if you have no conscience, if you have no sense of right or wrong, if you have no compassion for your fellow man, you can be aware of how poisonous, destructive, deadly, deceitful Islam is and not care.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible.
Sure.
But if you have a conscience, if you have any backbone, if you have any desire to stand up for what is right and oppose that which is destructive and deadly, if you read the newspaper, if you read the Quran, if you study the Hadith, if you are aware of history, there is no other option, no other intelligent option, but to be disgusted by, to expose and condemn Islam.
Let me ask you, if I went around anywhere in America and I lectured on the evil of the Nazis, no one would give it a thought. The difference?
What's the difference? You know, I think perhaps the difference is that that Nazism is wrongly considered to be a political mantra of fascists and therefore rightists, and political correctness, which is overtly liberal. It's part of collectivism and socialism.
Mm-hmm.
That it is okay to criticize that which is considered on the right. In fact, you could criticize Christianity and its crusades, for example, and not be viewed as intolerant. But the fact is that Nazism, if you read Mein Kampf, which is the scriptures of Nazism, it's a religion.
Mm-hmm.
And it is part political and part religious, but collectively it is both political and religious. And then if you were to look at Islam, by its own definition, it is part political dogma, part military dogma, and part religious dogma. You could throw the military dogma into Nazism, too. They're the same beast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Hitler referred affectionately to Mecca in his diatribe of Mein Kampf. He degraded Christianity, and he looked on Islam favorably in Mein Kampf, and he specifically wrote that people can't be led, they cannot be properly controlled without a religious underpinning. So Mein Kampf was, in his words, the people's religion. And yet you can speak out against it for the atrocities that it perpetrated on humankind, but you can't speak about Islam when it is the world's greatest menace. It is the most deadly plague the world is dealing with today. And what the Texas Christian University said is that his conservative views were inappropriate. It's inappropriate to be honest.
Well, tell that to the guy over in Russia that leaked everything to WikiLeaks, Snowden.
Yeah. Yeah, well, of course, yeah. It's and that's the problem with political correctness. That's the problem with socialist secular humanism. It is considered to be appropriate to be dishonest and inappropriate to be honest. So how in the world is anyone going to make an informed, rational decision when the information that they're allowed to hear is invalid and the information that is they are not allowed to consider is valid? If you had the best computer in the world operating with the most foolproof software and you feed it all rubbish in terms of data, what are the odds are that it's going to come with correct conclusions?
Well, it's not. You know, what goes in comes out. You know?
Right. I know this is not the purpose of the second hour of this program, but Texas Christian, being a Christian university, for them to tell a student that he needs diversity training and that it is inappropriate to criticize Islam, which is responsible for 99.9% of the world's terrorist acts today, for the collective kidnap and rape of little girls, for crucifixions, for beheadings, for the enslavement of tens of thousands of individuals, and you can't be critical of that? If you can't be critical of that, what can you be critical of?
Well, why don't we just change it to TMU, you know, Texas Multi-Ethnic University. I mean.
Yeah. How about TDU, you know, Texas Dishonest University.
Yeah.
You know, I've been exposed a lot to Texas here, and I made a disparaging reference to Texas when I called Waco Wacko and got some pushback on that. But I'm going to tell you. And I have some really good friends in Texas, both of us do.
Sure.
But there's something seriously wrong with Texas. I mean, way too much Baptist Christianity,
mm-hmm.
way too much military zeal, way too much just devotion to the violent game of football. I watch the NFL. I've got no problem with football, but... Good God, as I listen to what comes out of Texas and consider what comes out of Texas, I am just flabbergasted at the mindset of Texas. And yeah, ego and pride coming out of those who really can't qualify for either.
It's a strange place now. That was used to be a very independent. I mean, they were...
I know. They're not independent anymore. They don't ask you if you go to church. They ask you what church you go to
mm-hmm.
in Texas. And to have a discussion with a Texan about the idea that that Christianity is unreliable, that you ought not trust it, that you're squandering your soul and the souls of your loved ones, your children's souls, if you raise them to be Christians. You try to have that conversation with a Texan, and there isn't one in 100 that can process what you're saying or willing to consider what you're saying.
So why would they be so not down on Muslims?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, Hassan and Fort Hood, where did that occur?
Yeah.
Where was the two Islamic States jihadists when they decided that they would go and play jihad and gun down an anti-Islam meeting of the attendees? Wasn't that also in Texas?
I believe so.
Yeah. Why?
They just keep their feet in every camp. How do you do that?
I don't know, but I'm saddened by it because there once was a time I think that Texas was a reasonably independent place where independent thought and responsibility and hard work prevailed. But there's a disproportionate number of Texans now that have either been indoctrinated or have capitulated to the point where they've lost their character. They've lost their background. They've lost all sense of reality. And I can tell you, I have a very good friend who has been in Texas for a while, and the horror stories he tells me about the women that he meets in Texas. I mean, they're insane. They're no moral capacity whatsoever. I mean, they're grotesquely immoral and insane would be the best way to put it. Literally immoral and insane. And maybe there are some. You know, I know several women in Texas that I would speak very highly of, but wow.
I mean, a big state you can find, too. What is this, Lot?
Really? And I guess if you were to look for the worst of them, go and look for a university administration. Now, what I want to do here on Paul is I want to just recap where we have been in the second chapter and make a couple of closing statements before we move on. Because this has been one of the most revealing exposés that I have ever encountered, is what we have learned most recently when you confront the reality of the second chapter of Galatians, where Paul is opposed to and totally disregards the testimony of the of Yosha's disciples. And as such, if you're a Christian, you're living a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is no Jesus, there is no Christ, there are no Gospels. There, you cannot follow him, you can't know him, you can't know what he did or what he said if you embrace Paul's letter to the Galatians, because he disregards the eyewitness testimony. So you'd have to discard the even the hearsay testimony, because it was provided indirectly by the eyewitnesses, the disciples. So you'd have to discard Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, which he did. Never quoted any of them at any time. You'd have to discard the Christian Jesus, because Paul never quotes him. And so you have no Jesus left. You have no Gospels left. Revelation is gone, so you have no prophecy. You have no prophecy of any kind to prove divine inspiration. And the letters from Shimon Kefesh, from Yahochanan, and from Jacob, all gone. All you've got left is Paul. That's the reality. Hey, Kirk, if you're informed and rational, if you know what Paul wrote in the second chapter of Galatians, and you consider it rationally, you have to make the decision to either accept Paul and reject the disciples. Now, if you reject the disciples, you're rejecting everything that is known in the from the perspective of the New Testament about your Jesus, whose name is actually Yosha. So you know nothing that he said. You know nothing that he did. You cannot benefit from him in any way. Because Paul never once quotes him and never once writes anything that's biographically accurate about him.
No.
So he is unknowable.
Correct.
And you can't keep the what you would call the Old Testament, because Paul has said that the Torah is dead, that it cannot save, and that it is a cruel enslaver and of the flesh. So you have to throw away the Torah. And since he's demeaned the author of the Torah, that would mean that the prophets and the Psalms are trash too.
Trash, yes.
And so since he specifically demeaned the three disciples who wrote letters, and that would be 1st and 2nd Peter, Shimon Kefesh, 1st, 2nd, and 3rd John, Yahochanan, and Jacob, as well as the Revelation, which was also by Yahochanan, the individuals that Paul deliberately and specifically assails, you've got nothing. I mean, all you have is Paul's letters. And if you're not viewing it that way, if you're not saying, all right, I'm going to be engaged in a religion based entirely on Paul with the exclusion of everything else, then you're absolutely fooling yourself. And how many Christians go around with 13 letters by Paul and Hebrews and have gotten rid of everything else? Or do they kid themselves and say they have a Bible?
They have a Bible. I mean,
right. Paul, you're living a lie.
Paul doesn't even give you any historical stuff that you, you know, there's a thing called internal clues in history. You can find out part of the story because you can pick out clues in a history of something and say, oh, okay, well, that means in that date they did this, da-da-da-da. And you can tell some of the story. He doesn't even report anything that you could use.
No.
That way. I mean,
he can't even tell his own history. He can't even report his own life accurately.
Right.
Every attempt he makes to describe what he did, when he did it, and what he said, he contradicts himself. He can't even, he can't even get his own life straight. And none of his testimony adds up. And so...
elevate this guy to Bible studies three times a week.
Right. I mean, he was a horrible writer. He offered no prophecies. His grasp of history, particularly scriptural history, particularly the history of Abraham and the covenant, is completely erroneous. I mean, he writes in Galatians that the covenant that is depicted in the Torah was with Hagar. I mean, you have to be an absolute dunderhead. I mean,
right.
to not realize that that is untrue. And so when Paul claims it, why didn't the entire world reject him?
Well, his political view is Roman.
Right.
His religious view is rabbinical. The very thing that Yahshua railed against.
His rabbinical. I'd say his religious, his writing style is rabbinical, which is So if you look, because his religious style, his philosophy is Gnosticism.
Right.
His religion is of the Dionysus cult. So his religious views are that of Dionysus. His philosophical bent is Gnosticism. His writing style is rabbinical. By that, what I mean is the Talmud are rabbinical arguments, individual rabbis arguing among themselves and arguing with Yahweh in his Torah depiction. And so the Talmud is filled with "but I say." And this is my view, my argument against some interpretation in the Torah. So just like rabbis, they will refer to the Torah for credibility, but then they will twist it to suit their agenda. So his writing style is completely and totally rabbinical.
Yeah. Well, I was also thinking about, you know, how much he heralds that he studied on there, Gamaliel.
Yeah, right. Whatever. Yeah, he did.
That sort of thing, and that's like some big credit he gets.
Right. Yeah. No, he picked up the rabbinical arguments. Rabbis chose the name rabbi, which means to be exalted, because they viewed themselves as exalted, just like Paul viewed himself as exalted. So, yeah, Paul's style is purely rabbinical. Now, he is not rabbinical in his religion. He was opposed to the, although he wrote he was in favor of it. The eyewitness accounts of, and there's two, direct eyewitness accounts that form the so-called Christian New Testament. Matanyahu is the most complete of them, Matthew. I mean, Yahweh gives. And Yohanan is a great addition to it, because while Yohanan doesn't detail the life and initial testimony of Yahusha as Matanyahu does, he does do a marvelous job of providing the testimony that Matthew did not record. So it's private testimony to the disciples is the thing that Yohanan focuses on. And, of course, Yohanan wrote down the events that he witnessed in Revelation, which is one of the most revealing of all books, dutifully noted and named. And so those two are the two eyewitness accounts, but very close to it is Mark, because Mark was an attaché to Shimon Kephesh. And so Mark's testimony written in Greek was provided based upon Shimon Kefesh's Peter's testimony. And to whatever degree that that Luke is accurate, and Luke does provide us some things we don't find elsewhere. And, you know, there's places where Luke is clearly not right and places where, you know, he's providing additional information. If there's something available in Luke that is available with one of the eyewitness accounts, you've got to take the eyewitness account. But there's some things that are incremental. And to the degree that his sources were Matanyah, Yaokanan, Jacob, and Shimon Kefesh, Peter, then you know, it's a decent historical portrayal.
Mm-hmm.
But let me ask you this.
Okay.
The disciples, did they quote Yahusha?
Mm-hmm.
Often?
Just about all the time.
Okay. Did they ever contradict him?
No.
No. Paul, did he ever quote Yahusha?
I found nothing.
Does he contradict him?
Absolutely, on every account.
So why would anybody in the argument between Paul and the disciples choose Paul over the disciples?
Because they hate God and they hate the Torah and they hate the Jews. If you really want to get right down to it. The whole thing is built on that. If it's not built on that, you tell me what it is built on.
Yeah, then that would explain why Paul picked circumcision as the divisive issue. Because circumcision was the sign of the covenant created in the Torah with the Jews, the chosen people, and their God. So by picking this particular fight, his testimony would resonate with those who hate the Torah, hate Jews, hate Israel.
Is there a better way to shut the Passover door, shut people out of the Passover door than that?
No. Is there a better way to keep people out of having a relationship with God than excluding circumcision? No.
Absolutely. No.
No, it's the... since Paul was such a dunderhead, it's obvious that the inspiration to focus this on circumcision, the argument on circumcision, was...
Elsewhere.
Yeah, was satanic.
Yeah.
And so... Paul, because it precludes eternal life, because it precludes participation in Passover, and it precludes a relationship with Yahweh, because it's the sign of the one and only covenant, and therefore it precludes salvation.
There is nothing in the philosophy of Paul, the religion of Paul, the Ignatius that you mentioned a minute ago, the rabbinic style of argument,
mm-hmm.
or his conclusion about who to serve in the form of God-appointed governments,
mm-hmm.
that is not satanic.
No. You know, and clearly his Pauline doctrine is a mix of prevailing styles. It is clearly Gnostic based on his diatribes on the spirit and the flesh. That is pure Gnosticism. It has no basis in Yahweh's testimony. In fact, Yahweh calls the flesh good, and he calls the spirit good. And there are bad things associated with the spirit, and he acknowledges them, and there's bad things associated with the flesh, and he acknowledges them, but there is Gnosticism is Greek and thus Roman philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his philosophy. It's wrong. His religion is based solely on Dionysus. He quotes Dionysus, and his religion is about Christmas and Easter and a dying and resurrecting resurrected God. And so every aspect of the Pauline Jesus Christ is predicated on Dionysus, the very popular Greek religion that was usurped almost totally by the Romans, right? By the Romans.
Yes.
And you know, you even look at it. I mean, the Dionysus' relationship with the Graces, you know, a byproduct of an illicit sexual affair, and he brings the Graces as the central figure in his religion. Mm-hmm. So that's the religion. The style is purely rabbinic, but I, Paul, say, you know, it's everything is argumentative. It's egotistical. It's purely, and it's based on an attitude of superiority. So the argument, the style of it is purely rabbinic. And his politics are totally and completely Roman.
Mm-hmm.
telling you to submit to Rome.
Right.
And Yahweh's style has nothing to do with and teaching is the inverse of Gnosticism. It's the besmirches the pagan religion of Dionysus. It is, and Yosha particularly was wholly and completely opposed to rabbinic arguments.
Mm-hmm.
And so
well, every prophet was that
right.
Every time they leaned that way, he would
right.
take them out, or you know, that's why they wound up
right.
in Babylon.
So, like Islam, you got this hodgepodge of philosophy, of politics, and of religion. None of which are true, that are amalgamated and bastardized to make the central figure delivering this milieu of madness to be considered godly, as was the case of Muhammad, as was the case of Paul. And yet, if you read the Quran, you realize it's the dumbest and worst book ever written. If you read Paul's letters, it's the dumbest and worst series of rants ever committed to paper.
So what's the hold?
Yeah, what's the hold? And I think you nailed it.
I have to be.
Yeah, a deep-seated hatred of the creator God of the universe and his nature. You see, he is not religious, and he doesn't fit into the religious mold that people want of him. That he is uncompromising. He's politically incorrect. He's anti-religious. And that his Torah is about teaching, and people prefer to be legislated. And just look at this. You know, Paul makes the argument that the Torah is law, and therefore it's enslaving, and so you have to submit to it. And yet, every aspect of every aspect of Pauline philosophy, of politics, and of religion are submit to him.
Yeah.
And if you don't, you're condemned as satanic. And speaking of satanic, you know, on top of all of this, Paul, as we mentioned, never got anything right historically, couldn't even keep his own personal life straight, but he only gave two prophecies, both of which he got wrong, and on top of that, his writing style is abysmally bad.
Mm-hmm.
And he's irrational in his writing, but then you put all of that together, and any one of those arguments alone is enough to crater anyone's respect for Paul.
All right.
But then you realize that he admitted that he was demon-possessed. He admitted that he was insane. And he admitted that he could not be trusted by saying, I will pretend to be whatever causes me to get the greatest advantage. And then, if you take that approach, any one of those statements ought to be enough to reject Paul if you're an informed, insane individual. But then you have Yahweh calling him out by name, describing his character and audience and his issues and his timing and saying that he's the plague of death. And then, if that were not enough, the whole story of the people choosing Shaul, Saul, over a relationship with him through the Torah.
And that's
it's all there just to warn you against Pauline Christianity.
Yeah.
Because it didn't do the Yehudim any good, not of that day.
No, God and King is not a good formula.
Right. And he's telling you, and giving the same name, Shaul. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. This is what he's going to do to you. That's what he did to you, Christian. Read it. I mean, it's painstakingly precise in terms of being prophetic of Shaul. And then you've got Dode as the antagonist of Shaul. And what does he speak of? A uncircumcised Philistine that is in opposition to God. It's Paul.
Yeah.
It's a reference to Paul. And then he goes on to write the most brilliant songs to the Torah and how to observe it. It's, you know, he is the antidote to Shaul. He's the antidote to Paul, even now. And then you have Yosha calling him out by name, lowly and little. Calling him out by character, the wolf in sheep's clothing. Calling him out by his claim to be an apostle in Revelation. Calling him out by the one who changed his name and came in his own name that was widely accepted. While Yosha was, who came in his father's name, was rejected. Yeah. And Christians did all of that. And then we had the whole explanation of rotten fruit.
Mm-hmm.
We find there's a direct tie-in
to that,
to Paul even there. And so here's Yosha saying, if someone claims what Paul did, that they've seen him in the wilderness, if someone says that he is the Christ, you need to understand that they're misleading you. Don't follow him. And so you've got Yosha telling you as bluntly as he can that Paul is a complete fraud. Yeah, well, warning us that he's the plague of death. Paul admitting he's demon-possessed, that he's insane, that he is a complete fraud in his own hand, in his own testimony. And here he has this diatribe that's wholly and completely opposed to Yahweh and his Torah. And never once cites Yosha, and yet he condemns those who tell us what Yosha said and did, saying that their testimony was worthless. And this fellow is the guy that Christians base their religion upon? Whoa. So this is what the pretender, the complete fraud, the wolf in sheep's clothing, had to say. Later, through 14 years also, I went up to Jerusalem, along with Barnabas, having taken also Titus. I went up from an uncovering, an unveiling revelation, which lays bare to them the beneficial messenger, which I preach among the races, down from mine own, uniquely and separate, but then to the opinions and presumptions and suppositions, not somehow perhaps into foolishness and stupidity, without purpose or falsely, I might run or ran. To the contrary, not even Titus, a Greek being, was compelled, pressured, or forced to be circumcised. But then on account of the impersonators who faked their relationship, brought in under false pretenses, who sneaked into the group to secretly spy and clandestinely plot against the freedom from consciousness and liberation, from the constraints of morality that we possess in Christo Iesu, in order that us they will actually make subservient. And my, I mean, it's just hard to read this when you know what.
A long run on sentence.
Whoa, my! It's not only a long run on sentence, but it's not even a decent sentence. And when you think about the context here, anyway, he says, "To whom neither to a moment we yielded, surrendered, or submitted, in order that the truth of the God may continue to be associated among you. But now from the ones currently reputed, presumed, and supposed to be someone important, based upon some kind of past, they were actually and continue to be nothing, completely meaningless and totally worthless to me. It carries through and bears differently the face of the God of man, not take hold of, acquire, or receive. Because to me, the ones currently presuming and supposing, presently dispensing opinions based upon reputed appearances, of no account, utterly meaningless and worthless was their advice and counsel, their cause and contribution in the past. Contrarywise, nevertheless, notwithstanding the objection, exception, and restriction, having seen and perceived that because, namely, I have been believed, entrusted with the healing message and beneficial messenger of the uncircumcised or uncircumcision, inasmuch as Petros of the circumcised. That is Galatians 2, 1 through 7. When you read it all together,
like a claptrap, huh?
Whoa. It's just so repulsive. And ladies and gentlemen, we've been over this before, but in summation, Paul was called to Jerusalem not because of a revelation, but because he was specifically summoned. And we know that because Acts tells us so. And so the revelation idea was a lie. After 14 years was also a lie. It hadn't been nearly that long a time. And he was called because his preaching was in conflict with the Torah and in conflict with Yahusha, wholly and completely in conflict with both. And that the people that he met with, there were no false brothers. No one sneaked into the room. And you can't be more free than you are in the covenant. Every bit of that was false. And the people he said were supposed to be important because of their past, those were the disciples. And he said their testimony was utterly meaningless and worthless to him. Then, if you're going to believe Paul, it would be utterly meaningless and worthless to you. And therefore, the real testimony, the words and deeds of Yahusha, are completely meaningless and irrelevant to you. Then, contrary-wise, he's saying that Shimon Kephesh, Peter, was preaching the message of circumcision, and that Paul was preaching the message of uncircumcision. A distinction has been made. Whose side are you going to be on? Are you going to accept the message of circumcision or the message of uncircumcision? Who do you choose? Knowing that the choice isn't between Shimon Kephesh, Peter, and Paul. No.
Life and death.
Life and death.